Welcome to the Multifamily Zone, where business meets family. We explore what the entrepreneur life looks like from the family perspective. Now, here are your hosts, Julia and Gino Barbaro.
Hey, everyone. This is Julia Barbaro, host of the Multifamily Zone podcast. I'm here with the co-founder of Jake and Gino, my husband and co-host, Gino Barbaro.
First time, baby, is the charm on this one.
I wonder what everyone's thinking, because we always comment about my intro and how often I mess up. Every time I look at my husband, I mess up. I don't know why.
It's always my fault, everybody. Just take the blame. Fall on the sword. Today's guest left the left after questioning the victim culture narrative she had been living. 21-year-old Amala Epinobi is a self-described left-wing activist turned conservative influencer and PragerU ambassador. She shares her ideological transformation through her posts and stories, and today she will be sharing with us. Welcome to the show, yes, Amala.
Welcome.
Oh, I'm happy to be here. Thank you for having me on.
Wow. This is so exciting. We had Will Witt on a couple shows ago, and I was super excited when you okayed to be on here. So thank you for joining us. Thank you for this conversation. Thank you for being out there as a young woman. Out in the world, and a lot of us are listening to you, and I just want to thank you from the start. But I want to hear your story. Tell us your story.
Sure. I'll make it as short and succinct as I can. But I grew up in Florida. I was raised by a single mother of three who happens to be a radical leftist. So while I'm doing the work that I do for PragerU now, she's doing the work for the left in Florida. And as you can imagine, growing up with that influence as a young person, I should mention my mother is white, and it's only pertinent to the conversation because of how much race was a part of growing up for me. So I was from a very young age taught that by virtue of being born Black and being born female, that life was going to be really hard for me. There would be more barriers placed in front of me towards success than there would be for somebody like you. And I, of course, internalized that and carried a lot of hate. And of course, I was sold the narrative that this exists because of the founding fathers. This exists because our institutions and our systems are created and has racism in the foundation of that creation. So as you can imagine, I was extremely angry at everybody and everything. And I wanted to be an activist. I was going to be the person who changed the world. That was my job, as is every leftist job. So I went through middle school and high school, sort of developing myself as a young activist, talking about issues, arguing with people on everything on any given day. And I graduated high school and thought, no way, I'm going to go to college. I'm going to get straight into the movement. I'm going to be a young activist. And I got hired at my mother's organization to do that. So I did that for a little less than a year, realized that I was on the wrong side of history and hanging out in the wrong rooms, and became a conservative and started making those videos on the internet.
When did you realize that? When was the turning point?
Take us back to that. I want to know exactly what was going on in your head when you're like, wait a second, I'm on the wrong side.
Right. So this was in the end of 2018. And I was doing, of course, a lot of work. My work focused around specifically young people. I was a youth organizer traveling around to different middle schools and high schools and essentially indoctrinating kids now that I look back on it. But I was constantly being bombarded with questions about socialism, about race, about the patriarchy in America. And oftentimes they were questions I couldn't answer. So I constantly had little things digging in the back of my mind about things that I couldn't support with the framework and ideology that I had had so far. And it wasn't until I started really looking into the people that I was working with and listening to them, that I started to truly question where I stood ideologically. I went into work every day and was bombarded with what I call blatant racism. A lot of people refer to it as reverse racism, but I call it blatant racism. The narrative around white people not having a place in this country anymore. White people are the reason that we're in peril. They shouldn't be able to speak on our issues. In fact, if we could get them out of this country entirely, that would be fantastic. And again, I was raised by a white family. So I was going into work every day, working 9 to 5 with these people who wanted nothing more than to eradicate white people from America. And then going home to my conservative white grandparents who were making me dinner and making sure I got to school on time and having me apply for scholarships and just making me setting me up for success in life. So it's very difficult to hold those two ideas in your brain at once. And when I questioned the authority at this organization and said, why is it that you're so racist towards white people? I was told directly to my face, you don't know how oppressed you are. It's not my job to convince you of your oppression. And it's not my fault that you're not as angry as you should be. So as you can probably imagine after hearing that, you start to question everything that you do.
How's your relationship been with your mom since, I guess you said jump ship or change sides?
Sure. When I first started to express conservative thinking to my mother, it was a really, really contentious time for us. Every time we would get together, we would be at each other's throats, just screaming and yelling back and forth. And it was a learning curve for me to meet somebody who disagreed with me and try to have those conversations, because I was constantly being affirmed by everybody around me when I was a leftist. And suddenly people were not liking what I had to say. So we went through a really contentious period, a few months, and then we sort of decided that politics is no longer a part of the discussions that we have. We basically try to avoid it at all costs. And now we're closer than we've ever been before. So of course, we went through a really, really hard time right there at the jump. And now we're doing a lot better.
Well, Amala, I'm Italian. And that has been the story of my life. I am on my mom's side. And we're always at each other's throats. We're always, that's just basic everyday kind of thing for us. So you've got a really normal family, if you're looking from my perspective.
Right.
So
right. Yeah, but dysfunction is normal, as far as I'm concerned.
Yes. But let me ask you, though, it's really sad, though, and I mentioned this before we got on, inviting conflict with respect. Why can't we have a conflict with your mom or my mom and say, let's be respectful about it. I respect your opinions. I think you're totally wrong. I think you're crazy, but do it with respect and let's have a dialogue. Why can't we do that?
I think something has changed within the sphere of politics here in America, where it used to be that we could have disagreements on social issues or fiscal issues, but we had a shared love of country. And we knew that what we were doing was trying to help. We're trying to make this place better. And now I think we view each other as enemies, and we view one side as trying to destroy this country. And you hear a lot of that rhetoric from conservative speakers. You hear a lot of that rhetoric from leftist speakers. Conservatives want nothing more than to destroy America and hold down people of color and women. And when that's the lens that you're looking through your political conversations in, it's you're setting yourself up for disaster, because it's no longer, I respect this person, I respect the opinions that they have, and we just want to talk this through. It's, this person is evil. They want to destroy the beautiful utopia that I'm trying to create. And I need to shout and scream my opinions at them until they understand it. It's a totally different framework for conversations that we're having right now.
And one thing I'd like to point out, maybe they can answer this question to me, but if we're such a racist country, we're such a terrible country, why do they want refugees to come in? Why are the borders open? I mean, that's the thing that gets to me. If we're so terrible, why are you allowing people in here? You should tell them to stay out because we're so bad. Can they answer that question? Have you answered and asked them that question and gotten an answer from them?
No, you don't really get answers, because they'll say, well, those countries are horrible too. And just because people are coming to America doesn't mean that it cannot improve. And nobody on the conservative side is saying that America shouldn't improve. We are all about progress and innovation and improving, but they try to pigeonhole you to make you look like a horrible person. And it's a very valid question. Mm-hmm. If America is so systemically racist and horrible towards people of color, why have we had record amounts of illegal immigration? That means even when we tell people, stop. Yes. Do not come here. 1.6 million people this year have tried to get into the United States of America. And I think particularly with my background, I have a Nigerian father, Black as any other native born Black American would be, viewed the same way by police, viewed the same way by our institutions, viewed the same way by the court system. But we have recorded success that is so much higher than native born Black Americans. Why is that? Mm-hmm. It's all about a mentality and the way that you view the culture and your place, country. And it is really harmful to teach children that this country is systemically racist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, Amala, it seems like you're very educated. And that's something that if to have a conversation with someone who is not educated about the topic, it just emotions come out of the other side. And that is a challenge in and of itself. You know, everyone listening out there, you know, to have a conversation, a really deep conversation, you want to have an argument, be educated about what you're trying to argue, first of all. Yes. But I give you credit, because you're very bold and brave to come out and say, you know what, I disagree, and here's the reasons. And it is, like Gino said, to be at a table with family who you disagree with, it's a challenge. Mm-hmm. And I hear it more so than ever. And the crazy thing is, we can have a conversation, because if we are in control of our side of it and in control of our emotions when we're having the discussion, the other side sees that calmness and they see that peace that we have about it. And there's something about it that they do want to come back and question it. So even if they leave the conversation angry at you, there's something about you that just shows truth And I think that's right what you're after.
100%. Yeah, I think you should most of the times approach these conversations not with saying, I want to change this person's mind and I want them to be pro-life by the time they walk away from this table. Approach it by saying, I want to know why this person's pro-choice. Yes. And ask those questions. And it's so much better and warmer to ask questions and try to understand somebody than to come in with statements and say, well, look at this study and look at the facts around this and you're killing people. It's just not conducive for a good conversation at all.
That's right.
So what I would say to people is read Stephen Covey's book. There's two quotes in there that really resonate well with me. People see the world as they are, not as it is. So they're seeing it from their own paradigm. And the other one is it's a stimulus versus response. When I was 30 years old, I would be stimulated by something and then I respond quickly. I've matured a little bit with wisdom. I've slowed down. Although when my wife triggers me, I get, I go crazy.
That's really what
on
it
her. But when it comes down to other people, everyone out there,
right?
You have the response. You cannot get triggered. I cannot trigger you. You have the ability that when you get stimulated, you have a response. You can respond in any way you want. Take a step back. Take a deep breath like we were doing before, Amal, and we got on the camera. Take that deep breath and think about that response. You cannot, you have, once you understand that, you take back the power, you take back the empowerment, you take back your own control, and you can respond any way. I think nowadays people use that as an excuse, the victim mentality. I want to ask you though, who are your mentors? Who are your role models now? I can only guess what your role models were back then. Who have you transitioned to now?
Right. I found a safe haven on the internet of all places. You know, as a young person with questions, where are you going to go? You go to the internet. And I found people like Tom Sowell. He's a huge role model for me. He was one of the main people who really broke through what I was thinking and got me to facts and objectivity and sort of looking at the world differently. So he's a really big role model for me. I started watching people like Dave Rubin and Dennis Prager, and now I'm great friends with the both of them. And my life is really, really altered. These were people that I was just looking at on a screen and listening to and going, wow, these are compassionate people who want to understand why I think what I think and are trying to get me to the facts. And then now I get to call them and have conversations with them about the issues that I talk about. But yeah, they were really big influences. Larry Elder was a huge influence on me. I was just consuming anything that I could find that was, a divergence from what I was believing before.
Amala, what about your faith? How has your faith changed your beliefs? Or talk a little bit about that.
So faith-wise, I'm an agnostic, which is not something that you see very much on the conservative side, and it garners a lot of attention and a lot of questions. But I was raised, my mother is an atheist, what I would consider to be a hardcore atheist, sort of the mindset that religion has been bad for the world, has created more bad than good from a philosophical standpoint. And from that, I sort of just garnered the I don't know standpoint. I don't know where I lie faith-wise, and I'm totally comfortable with being in that space in my life and sharing that with people. And I'll tell you what, the moment that I announced that I was agnostic on Instagram, my PO box was filled with religious books. I got the Torah, I got the Quran, I got the Bible. I've got all these different people who are trying to reach out to me with faith, which I think is such a beautiful thing. So far agnostic is where I lie.
My daughter, 7-year-old, asked me a question. She asked me.
You can ask Will.
Ask this to Will. She asked me this question. She said, is God a Republican? That's what she asked me.
Interesting.
Because she hears a dialogue. We are pro-life. We are pro-business. Mm-hmm. I've had my own business since 1994. We homeschool. So we are totally about the responsibility mindset and about making our own choices, limited government. Sure. I don't need anything. So if you can't answer that question, I'd like you to ask Will and have him email me the answer to that, because I find that to be interesting.
There seems to be a clear sort of movement in that way, because you talk to a lot of conservatives and they go, well, why are you conservative? Because I feel like it represents Christian values. And I feel like biblically I can look to the Bible and cite scripture and I can see that translated in the values and the legislation and policy that we advocate for. So I don't know if God himself would choose to put a label on himself, this omnipotent.
I agree.
But I think he's outside of politics.
Right. I think he's sort of, yeah, I think he's beyond labeling political sides, I must say.
So let me ask you one other question. How did you handle and overcome the negativity from friends? Because that has got to be overwhelming for a young woman, let alone myself. I'm much older. When I see hate speech on my YouTube videos or anything, it really wears you down.
It really eats away at him. Like, I really have to like comment. It really gets to you when you see little things online.
So not so much you, but it gets to him more, or is there?
It gets to him. It kills him. So we want to know how you handle it, because coming from a liberal to a conservative, you have friends, not so much the family, but I think it's more friends. Mm. How did they handle that? And how did you handle that?
So I had a few friends who just dropped me completely, blocked me off of everything, erased me. And it wasn't even a conversation. I think they found some TikTok videos that I was making and thought, okay, well, this girl's not in my life anymore. So there was never truly a discussion to be affected by. I do say that I've never been an ultra sensitive person ever since the day I was born. I've never been super sensitive. So it's never truly bothered me. Plus, I sort of grew up in the age of the expanding internet, so I was constantly inundated with things that young people should never see, and that's bullying and hate everywhere. So when I came out on the internet as a conservative and started making videos, I was bombarded with lots of support and lots of hate. I mean, detailed death threats of people explaining how they want me to kill myself and just crazy things. But ever since I was a young kid, my grandmother had always taught me, you know, you can't control what people say or what people do and most of the things that happen to you in this life, but you can control 100% your reaction to it and what you do moving forward. So I'm an extremely like bursting with positivity type person. Nothing truly bothers me, which I think I'm lucky in that sense, because so many people don't have that privilege.
I love that. I think that just shows your age, is that you didn't grow up in the world of internet. Really?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a big deal. Yeah.
Yeah. It's millions of people now have access to tell you all the things that they think about you, the good and bad.
Well, my problem is come say it to my face. You know, Mike Tyson says it's all great until you have a plan to get punched in the face. Come say it to my face. I want you to say same thing you said on the screen. Say it to my face.
Well, it's easy to write things online. And if you can say it,
and we'll go at it. But that's the problem. It's so enabling and it's so victim. I mean, like, you don't even know me. The content that I'm putting out, the content that you're putting out, you don't know yourself as the person. So it's almost becoming detached. You almost have no more emotions. And that's actually sad, to be honest with you.
It is. Yeah. And I have a story that pertains to that. I was going to do my first university speech ever, and it was at Winona State University. And on the internet, they have a college Republicans club and a college Democrats club. The college Democrats club jumped on it. We are staging a protest. Come and fight these hateful ideologies. Fight PragerU. How dare they be on our campus? She has no space here. And I show up to the campus to do my speech, and outside are 50 protesters, all with their signs talking about hate speech. And I walk up to them, and this is on video, you can look it up, and say, let's have a discussion right here, right now. I'm here in front of you. Tell me what you think about my ideology is hateful, and please come into the speech. You can watch it for an hour. When Q&A comes around, you're the first in line. There's plenty of seats for you. Not a word. And I stood there for 20 minutes trying to get one student to come and talk to me, but they were so ready to do it on the internet, and not a single one.
That's called being a coward.
Yeah.
So for all of you out there doing it, you are being a coward.
Yep.
Step up or shut up.
Well, that's what we were talking about before, is if you're not educated and you have just emotion and you just don't have any truth in it. You cannot back up your point if there's no substance there. And that's the problem, is that you know, you have something to back yourself up with. What kind of advice do you give? There's a lot of ladies out there listening, but more importantly, the youth. We have 5 girls, and I love the fact that you're not scared to speak up. You know, I feel like we need a little bit more of that. We need a little bit more, you know, just be brave and do it. Speak up for what you believe in. What advice do you give the ladies out there?
Yeah, I'll be honest. It's a tough question to answer. Right now in today's day and age, there is no immediate incentive to speak up and stand for what you believe in, because in the immediate, you're getting fired from your job. You're losing friends. People are shouting at you on the internet, which is a really tough thing to go through. But I always say, think about it in the long term, because if we think short term, nobody's ever going to speak up and do anything. It is so worth it right now to speak up, because you have no idea what's going to happen if you don't. If you don't speak up now, if you don't stand for your values with your friends, especially with young people, you risk losing those values altogether. And it's one thing, and I think something we've learned through this COVID crisis is people have this need to preserve life. I need my life. I need my life. And they're so scared and driven by fear of what will happen. Think about the life that you're preserving by not speaking up. It's not much of a life at all, because your values are gone. Your principles are gone. You don't have true friends anyways, because they don't truly agree with who you are as a person. So speak up and say something. And when you do, it is amazing how many people come out of the woodwork and say, "Oh my gosh, I'm so glad you said that. I was so scared to say that before, but now that you've said it, I'm willing to rally behind you." Yeah. Be the leader, be the person who does it first. And again, it is a very hard thing to do. I'll be extremely honest. There's no sugarcoating how hard the process is, but do it and it will be well worth it.
Do you mind if I expand on that for a few seconds?
Yes, absolutely.
So what I would say to everybody, the call to action to everyone listening to the show right now, we call it values-based decision-making. Mm-hmm. Most people go throughout life without knowing what their true values are. We have core values for our company: people first, extreme ownership, make it happen, growth mindset, unwavering ethics. Right. And for me, when I have to make a decision, especially long-term, I base it upon my values. For instance, I worked in the restaurant for years and years, and I had to work on the weekends, and it was incongruent with my values. I had to suffer through that. Now that I have Jake and Gino, I am not going out every weekend and becoming this amazing speaker, because I want to be home with the family. So I will defer that and do that. So check your values. Why did I move to Florida? Because I'm not going to be told to mandate something, to do something. So I've chosen where to live, and I feel great with it. When I was living in New York, I was incongruent with my values. And when you have that feeling in your stomach and you feel as if something's not, doesn't feel right, you're not living to your core values and your core beliefs, because we're setting goals in life, right? Our goals are just the result. How do you set goals? Your goals ultimately become your objectives plus your beliefs. And your beliefs have to have some type of value set in there. And most people don't have their core values set out. So how are you going to make those decisions? You need to have them there. So values-based decision-making, everybody.
Absolutely. 100%. And really think about what your values are, because you're going to change and develop as a person. And that's another important thing too. It's the three things that nobody wants to say is, "I was wrong," and "I don't know," and "Can you please answer this question?" Nobody wants to do that anymore, which is a sad state of affairs. And give yourself ample room to change as a person, because you will.
I love that. I love that, because we don't want to be wrong. Like you said, I honestly, when my husband comes in and proves me wrong, I actually do love
which
it.
Is often,
I know.
Is it often?
It is often. Okay. It's more often than I see, but I like it, because I know I grow as a person. And that's really everyone out there. We want to be better. If we want to grow as a person, it's okay to be wrong, because now you're going to learn something new. And if you change your mindset on something and you realize, you know what, I think there's more to this than I thought, let me go research it. Like Mala did, research what you believe in, or maybe you don't know what you believe in and you're trying to argue, but you don't even know what it is. Research it and you'll find the answer, but it might not be what you are used to. It might be something like you, the opposite of what you believed.
Right. It's so difficult to go and say, "Guys, I know I said this, but I was totally wrong."
But it shows what a strong person you are. That is so, it's so humbling to say I was wrong. You know? Yes. Ugh. Such a big deal.
Amala, on the show with Will, I actually drew out of him his purpose statement, his mission statement, his catalyzing statement for his life. And we came up with pursuer of truth and vanquisher of evil. That's what his purpose and mission is in life.
Right.
I don't want to put you on the spot, but have you thought about what your mission statement is in life? I mean, going forward, like you said, it'll always constantly change. But have you ever really put thought into that?
I mean, I've thought about it in a broader sense of like, what is it that I want to communicate to people when I do the work that I do? And it's really not going out and convincing young women and men to be conservative. That's not the primary goal. I think if I do that and it happens, well, kudos, that's great. But my goal is to get people to value the truth. And so much of what people do is just opinion-based, ideology-based. They choose a label for themselves and they go, "Well, now I'm going to go along the lines of everything that this label says." And that's the last thing that I would want to be, or I would want somebody else to be. So at the very least, I want people to have a healthy amount of skepticism and really truly search for truth in their endeavors. And if you find truth and you land on a more progressive leftist angle of the way that you view the world, by all means, because the preface to that was you going out and looking for what was actually true. So that's my goal when it comes to what I do in work.
Finding truth through a person's endeavors. I like that.
Yep.
Succinct. You got it?
That's
I got it.
I'll take it. I'll take it.
So we can go on for hours and hours here.
Yeah.
What are the next steps for you? You're young. I know you want to start, you want to have start and have a large family. How do you see yourself working, having that work-life balance, having the family? What do you see yourself doing in the future?
Sure. I think right now what I'm trying to do is I'm looking, you know, searching for somebody who's worth, you know, having that large family with, which in LA is quite difficult, but we're working on it. But doing lots of work. Will and I have a daily show called Will and Amala Live that we do every single weekday. So we've been working on that. I'm working on a separate show right now that I can't give all the details for, but it's going to be going through every single social issue that people are talking about and debunking every single lie around them and just trying to educate people from my perspective and from the research that I've done. So I'm going to work hard as far as towing the line of truth and bringing objectivity into spaces and going and speaking to young people and influencing them. And hopefully I will build enough of a platform that when I want to settle down and have my family and kids, which hopefully is very, very soon, because I'd like to have a large family, that I can homeschool my kids and work from home on the side. That is my goal.
That's awesome.
What do you enjoy most about your job, about what you do?
Oof, I have so much freedom. I get to come into work every single day and look at what people are talking about in the news and think about what's most important, what people are being tricked by, and go, you know what? I want to talk about that today. And I get to sit down on this set and I get to turn on a camera and just give my unfiltered, unabashed opinion on everything. And I think that's really great. It's a great amount of responsibility and power that I have at such a young age, which I constantly have to think about, but it is such an amazing, amazing power to be able to yield at where I'm at in my life. And I always keep that in mind, but yeah, the freedom of this job is really what I love the most.
And how do you select your next venture? Because you've got so many opportunities going on. You know, the person has got anabolic energy. Everything is great. Everything's an opportunity. Another show, another book, another podcast.
Sure.
How do you select? How do you choose?
I'm for the most part, I'm a yes woman. If you want me to come and speak somewhere, if you want me to write about something, I will do the research and put in the work for it. As far as big endeavors in career, like writing a book or, you know, getting into documentaries or something like that, I don't want to do something that I feel like is not adding to the space. So if I was ever going to write a book or something like that, it would be extremely well researched. I would put in a lot of travel and actually really get down to the heart of whatever issue I choose to speak on. I think it's unfortunate that a lot of people write books and it's just simply their opinion and it's not necessarily adding something to the literary space. And I feel like if I'm not adding something or bringing something new, I need to step back and reassess. And that's when I'll make the decision to do that.
Love that.
You know, it's interesting. All of us were created for a purpose. Mm-hmm. And some of us were created for the limelight. And you're out there. You're very well spoken, very impressive, educated, smart, all of you get it all. And some of us are just quiet at home raising a family without the microphone. But we all put something into the world. We all have that. There's something about each one of us that is just unique and different. And I love that you're out there. You are courageous. And all those out there listening, just takes a little step forward. If you're nervous about speaking up about truly what you believe, just take a small step. You don't have to go get your own show like Kamala. Speak up a little bit, just little by little. I think that will build that courage in all of us because we all have it. We all have that. And so I just want to applaud you in that.
Oh. Yeah. Thank you so much. I mean, what you just said particularly reminds me of something that Dennis like hones in every speech that he gives. And he says, there's three groups of people in this world. There are the people who do nothing. There are the people who fight and there are the people who support the fighters. Mm-hmm. And if you're not willing to step up and fight, which is a very scary thing to do, I will admit, support some fighters, do what you can to do that because you can be that person behind the scenes who is making this stuff happen. Mm-hmm. I mean, PragerU is funded largely by average Americans who want to make a donation and see our content be made so that young people can see it. So, you know, support the fighters. Mm-hmm.
That's right. And two, as parents, we are the guide of our children and they're going to be out there. And it's interesting that your mom was so opposite of you and what came out of it. It's just amazing how that worked out. But parents at home, you are making a difference, whether you're home and it feels like you're not doing anything, but you are raising little people into the world to speak out. And so it's important. That's my point. All of our life decisions make a difference in the world.
Let me wrap this up really quick. It was the year 2018 that Amala decided she was on the wrong side. And she made a transformational shift. And the great thing about it is she found her role models, Thomas Sowell. She found all those different role models out there. And it wasn't just emotions. There was a lot of fact. There was a lot of hard work. She flushed out what her values were. And she's not out there trying to tell anybody what they believe or what they should believe. She's just out there presenting facts. And she wants to have an honest intellectual conversation and a debate. And I'll say this one more time. It's inviting conflict with respect. Let's do that with our families. Yep. It's okay if we argue. Let's argue respectfully and let's bring some facts to the table. And we're not out there trying to, you know, tell people what to do or how to think, but give them and be the light, you know, we'd said before. We want to have a big family. We're pro-life. We're not out there screaming at the rooftops, but I'm going to tell you, it is one of the best things you will ever have is having a large family and having an amazing spouse. There's nothing better in life. And how do you do that? And how do you show that? By living it, by living those core values. That's what we're out there trying to do, at least as far as the conservative side is. I'm not going to tell anybody what to do. I want to live my life. I want you to show you how happy we are. And then when you see that, I don't have to say anything because the actions speak louder than my words. So that's what we're trying to accomplish. I think that's what you're trying to accomplish. How can the listeners get a hold of you?
Oh, you can follow me on all social media. I'm at the Amla Ebenobi on Instagram, Amla Ebenobi on Twitter. We have Will and Amla Live that you can watch on PragerU's YouTube and Facebook. It's also on all of your podcast apps. So go and follow me and follow PragerU. That's how you'll get to me.
That's awesome. You're everywhere.
I know my face keeps popping up and all of this by accident. I just stumbled into this. So here we are.
That's right. Any final words?
Oh gosh, guys, look for the truth, question everything, have a healthy amount of skepticism, and by all means, prove me wrong. There's nothing more that I love in this world than to be proven wrong respectfully. So seek me out and try.
I love it. That's awesome.
Finding truth through endeavors. I love that. That is great.
Finding truth through endeavors. Yes. Love it.
We want to just thank you for taking the time out today.
And of course.
Continue success. And you will write that book and you will have that large family. So we're looking forward to it.
I'm looking forward to it too. Thank you so much for having me on. It's been great.
Thank you. Take care.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye.